This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living. I'm Lee Chui Lin. The number of older persons in the Asia Pacific is expected to triple from 438 million in 2010 to more than 1.26 billion by 2050. Based on these numbers, the burden of healthcare is expected to increase exponentially around the region, thereby making health systems a priority. Today, I'm discussing the policies and technologies needed to address the health concerns of an aging population with my guest, Walter Venkayan, Senior VP of Global Government and Public Affairs at Royal Philips, the Netherlands. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Lynn.
Malaysia is expected to be an aging nation by 2035, when 15% of the population will be classified as senior citizens. What are the public health concerns that come together with an aging population?
Well, that's indeed a question we discussed at length at the World Economic Forum, where basically in the emerging health systems around the region, we see two major trends coming together. We are unlocking access to care by and large throughout the region. And at the same time, we're seeing, as a result of the aging population, which you just described, the onset of non-communicable diseases. So yeah, I refer to this as almost a double whammy, which we need to entertain. Chronic diseases will have an even stronger impact on the health system, whilst indeed we're still unlocking access to a large part of the population in ASEAN. We also have fantastic examples of what you can do in anticipating change across the region. And I think Malaysia is an excellent example where, if you look at the statistics, we've been able to create a solid base in the healthcare system, delivering a healthier population, which is a requisite for continued economic growth.
We are talking about ASEAN, but do healthcare challenges tend to be region-specific, or are there similarities between different international regions?
That's a very good question. I would tend to say that, of course, a non-communicable disease is similar between patients across different regions. But you're absolutely right. Despite the fact that these are global challenges, they require local responses. And, as a company, and I think what is very clear at the World Economic Forum, stakeholders are starting to come together to collaborate these locally relevant responses to, in fact, what are global challenges. So yes, to your question, absolutely, it requires locally relevant approaches, depending on actually the total health system quality, the health system situation that is apparent in every different country.
Looking at the ASEAN agenda for inclusion and growth, how does this contribute to public healthcare systems in ASEAN member states?
Well, you know, when I look at the inclusion and growth agenda, again, I go back to that, the ability to sustain economic growth. And that requires a healthy population at large. The Secretary General of the WHO, Margaret Chan, said a primary healthcare approach is the most cost-effective way to organize a solid health system. And the way we look at that is, inclusion comes from making healthcare accessible to also the most vulnerable at affordable levels, which requires, you know, the unlocking of domestic, private resources, the partnership between multiple stakeholders, which includes the business and the private sector, and to drive improvement no longer along just the access of care facilities being available, but driving value and outcome-based improvements, but particularly focused on unlocking primary health care, community-based health care, which focuses on women, children, and adolescents, because we know that that's where we can make the impact and we can create that notion of both growth and inclusion and connect the two in a very effective way.
So bringing that down to ground level, what sort of policies are you suggesting that governments adopt for the future of their country's healthcare?
Well, the way we operate and work with governments and other stakeholders is that what we would like to see is a system of legislation which allows for that leapfrogging, that disruptive innovation that is required, both in terms of, you know, the system design, in terms of introducing information technology as the backbone, as well as providing a level playing field for different actors to start to innovate for an improved health system. And that can range from, legislation that will allow services to become available along two major dimensions, services for all population and all services available to all population. And those two dimensions need to be grown effectively in tandem.
Why do you consider the hospital-centric system unsustainable and ineffective?
Well, that's one of the lessons why I mentioned leapfrogging. By and large, in Western health systems, we have come to learn that we've designed our systems around hospitals as the center of healthcare provision. That was the right answer in the days where, when people fell ill, they went to hospital, they were cured, and they went home. With the aging population, the onset of chronic conditions basically shows that that's no longer sustainable. Our system is designed to treat sick patients, so you could also refer to it not as healthcare, but as sick care. And a hospital happens to be the most costly location to treat a patient. We therefore have to rethink these models and start connecting what we refer to as the health continuum from prevention to early diagnostics to treatment when necessary, but in a more seamless way. And that rethinking, that allows for that leapfrogging and that innovation that basically in emerging health systems, we can design systems differently rather than the Western health systems, which are stuck around the brick and mortar of our hospital systems.
So if we took it away from the brick and mortar then, for the average patient who might need something or might need, that kind of medical infrastructure, what would an alternative look like? Where would I go? What would happen? Where would my information be?
Yeah. Well, let me start with one example that really from the primary community healthcare side. We recently announced an effective cooperation in Indonesia where we equip health workers in communities with a cell phone-based application which allows them to screen and triage at-risk pregnancies early on the ground in these communities. As a result, we've been able to triple the number of early detected at-risk pregnancies, which surely will have an impact because these women are referred to primary and secondary care in a much earlier stage. So that information has been given into the hands of the community health workers and has become available to communities in Sumatra at a larger scale. On the other hand of the, for example, in the case of chronic heart failure patients, we've had a long standing relationship and partnership with Changi Hospital and the Eastern Health Alliance in Singapore. And today we announced the extension of that program, monitoring at-risk chronic heart failure patients in their homes through a centralized service station where trained nurses will supervise up to 500 chronic heart failure patients at once and triage those patients that show early signs of failure such that they can be called into the hospital for care at a very effective and targeted way. So just two examples of how information technology and different structural process organizational designs will help change our health system's design.
Who would need to participate in that change, in the co-creation of this different future?
Well, that's an excellent question, because we found, Lynn, that at large, there's no single stakeholder who can pull this off, and particularly in healthcare, it requires us to work across the boundaries, across stakeholders, physicians, patients, hospital providers, insurance companies, and the private sector alike need to come together in redesigning and co-creating a future health system that basically creates patient-centered realities which were unthinkable of 10 years ago.
How do consumers and patients participate in this vision?
In the in the programs that I've been involved with, and as a company we have developed, patients are always at the heart of every single design that we put out. So if you look at some of our co-creation sessions, patients will be at the table. If you think about it, the dialogue we've been having around big data and security and privacy issues, I believe that as long as you center that around the patient always being in control of who can see and work with their particular personal data, you are probably making choices that ultimately allow us to design our health systems in a patient-centric way. So they need to be at the table from the design onwards. There is simply no other way.
I'm speaking today over the phone with Walter van Kuijen, Senior VP of Global Government and Public Affairs at Royal Philips, the Netherlands. We're talking about the future of healthcare and different health systems in light of the healthcare challenges that face an increasingly aging population. Up next, we find out more about keeping healthcare costs down. You are listening today to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Over the phone with me today, Walter van Kuijen, Senior VP of Global Government and Public Affairs at Royal Philips, the Netherlands. And we're talking about health systems and how we need to change to address the health concerns of an aging population. Walter, what needs to be done to keep healthcare costs down? I mean, this is, of course, a major global concern.
It is, and it is indeed a global challenge, Lin, where health systems around the globe are, you know, more and more spending their resources or available resources on keeping patients healthy. There is a couple of things that we have been challenged with and that we are evolving on in several different environments. For example, the notion of moving care out of the most expensive locations of delivering that care into, I'd say, lower cost locations. The notion of integrating prevention in how we institutionalize health and healthy living. And more starting to approach the whole health continuum as a holistic approach. So not innovating or changing or impacting one of the individual silos, from home to prevention to diagnostics to intervention, but approaching it as a continuum of interventions and innovations through which we can keep the cost burden at acceptable levels.
What is connected care? I mean, these are some of the buzzwords that are thrown around. What is connected care? Why do you think it can help to manage the health concerns of an aging population?
Well, that's exactly to the point of the continuum. If you want to evolve a continuum of care solutions across, you know, again, this whole continuum from home to hospital and back to the home, you need to provide that in a connected fashion. And that's where solutions need to come in, where my data as a patient seamlessly flows from the different locations of health provision. And that is what we refer to as connected care. So that, just as a personal example, if I visit a hospital and I go to another hospital because that happens to have a physician who's specialized in my particular case, my data today doesn't travel with me. And I need to undergo similar examinations in that other hospital. It's a bit odd. In the world of digitalization, we all expect, for example, we travel around the globe and you go to an ATM, a banking machine, and you collect money within 3 seconds. Your account is being checked with a bank far away on the other side of the planet, and we all find that completely normal. If we order something online, we expect to be able to track a package every single minute of the day and know when it arrives at our home. Today, we don't have similar expectations about our healthcare systems. And it's not because the technology is not available. It's simply because we have not been able to realize a system that provides connected care solutions at this point in time effectively.
Would it be easy to implement, I mean, with our existing systems without having to dismantle everything?
The technology and the innovation is already available today, and it's a matter of co-creating solutions with the different partners that will allow us to effectively leverage that innovation, that technology that is available. And you refer to an aging society. We'll see more and more chronically ill patients coming into our system. They'll put an enormous socioeconomic pressure on the system. And just as an example, if we are able to manage chronic heart failure patients in their homes, which we can today, we can reduce the number of readmissions into the system. And as a result, you know, the total cost to the healthcare system will be lowered. And in effect, if I was a patient, being able to monitor my own health in my home, I'm a more engaged patient, I'm a more involved patient in my own care, and the quality of my life will be so much better because I don't have to see a hospital every time I think there is something wrong with me.
On that note, why should healthcare shift from reactionary medicine to promotion and prevention? Because that's also a part of it. I mean, if you have people who are healthier, who are actively engaged with their health, you would hopefully be able to prevent more diseases as opposed to just trying to treat the ones that pop up.
You are absolutely right. And that needs to be part and parcel of the health system's holistic approach that we talked about earlier. Prevention and ensuring patients, consumers even, before they become patients, are involved and aware in, you know, living a healthy lifestyle, ensuring that they are an engaged patient. They are a compliant patient, if you like, once they become a patient under treatment. That will have a significant impact in, indeed, us managing a health and healthcare system in a completely different way.
How can health promotion and prevention be done effectively? I mean, where would it need to start? Where would it need to begin to really have an impact?
I think it needs to start with every individual. It starts with us as you know, citizens. It starts with the design of our collaborative health system, the tools that are being made available, the promotion of healthy lifestyles. We also discussed, is there a role for government, for example, to start taxing unhealthy lifestyle components? That's a big debate out there that, you know, I know governments are struggling with, but those are the elements that will come forward. We as citizens have a responsibility in managing our own health, living a healthy lifestyle. And I think through the collaboration around health systems improvement, the partners, the stakeholders, including ourselves, can provide the educational elements that will help people do so.
Would you say that right now there are already all the necessary ingredients for it to come together for, you know, there to be a major disruption within the health system, within the health industry?
Absolutely. I am convinced that we have all the ingredients at hand. And we also today, in the interactions that we've had and the different sessions here at the forum, I am very optimistic. And there is the global challenges that we discussed, aging, the pressure on our healthcare systems. But at the same time, we are defining steps that we're going to execute on. We're on a journey. I see that some of this disruptive thinking is being embraced. Stakeholders are engaging, partners are engaging to create those new realities. And I think we're looking at a different future for health and healthcare going forward.
As part of the World Economic Forum, you spoke to Malaysian Health Minister Dato' S. Subramaniam about universal healthcare in ASEAN. Could you share with us any interesting highlights from that conversation?
Well, that conversation took place between a number of participants, stakeholders, as I described them, and it was along the lines of how do we provide universal health coverage across the region, and how do we learn from systems abroad, from systems within the region, and how do we accelerate the disruptive ideas and innovation that we've also discussed in our dialogue. What my takeaway was here is we can create those new realities along the axis of the dimensions of providing access of care to all, broadening the number of services, and at the same time unlocking resources and educating resources, but also unlocking funding mechanisms to make that happen. That makes me a very optimistic participant to the forum based upon the dialogues that we've had today.
And to close off, I mean, let's take that optimism and I wanted to ask you, what is your vision for healthcare in the future? Where do you see us going in the next 1 or 2 or 3 decades?
Oh, you're asking me about, you know, creating a future. Well, here is, I think my view would be a patient-centric healthcare system that is designed to deliver outcomes, values that we can measure, both in terms of access, quality of care, financial outcomes that are acceptable and that provides access at an affordable level to all. That is also how we subscribe and support the Sustainable Development Goal that we designed collectively as the world last year in September in New York, providing quality access to health and healthy living and health care to all people on this planet. And I would say if we can deliver that in the next 15 years, we've made tremendous progress for the citizens of our planet.
Thank you very much, Walter. I've been speaking with Walter van Kuijen, Senior VP for Global Government and Public Affairs at Royal Philips in the Netherlands, and we've been talking about the future of healthcare today. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.